Rachel Keane, thank you very much for coming on to the Data Strategy Show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Happy Friday to you, Samir. Thanks for inviting me to be on the session.
Pleasure, pleasure. Listen, just so that our listeners know a little bit about you, why don't you just tell me about your background and who Rachel Keane is?
Wow, that's a big question, isn't it? For a Friday morning. Okay, so my name. Wow. Okay, who am I? That varies from hour to hour, to be honest. Okay, so I'm Rachel Keane. I'm the founder of the Data Inspiration Group and the Dig Data Program. But I started my life off, as many do, as a university graduate back in the late 90s. I thought I was going to rule the world as a buyer for Karen Millen. That didn't transpire. On failing a maths test. More details to be continued on that. And I guess, I then followed, like we all do, we sort of drop into certain industry sectors. I had a knack for sales. I was very creative in terms of the way I dealt with sales and built relationships. And that saw me undertake and sell lots of things, but particularly spend a lot of time in recruitment, with my last recruitment gig being sort of 12 years in data and analytics, which then led me on to co-found Women in Data for the first 6 years of that life, and then moved on to create the Dig Data program, which essentially is a virtual work experience offering for students across secondary and tertiary education to build key employability skills and things like problem solving, data literacy, storytelling, and presentation, which, as we all know, it's incredibly valuable in that career vertical, but equally very valuable in every career vertical. So incredibly rewarding, 2.5 years in, loving it.
Great.
That's
I
me.
love
Oh, and I'm a oh
good.
yeah. Oh, and I'm a mum. I forgot
Yes. Well,
to mention
yes. You can't forget that one,
that.
can you?
Wow.
I'm sure your daughter will be very angry if you forgot
I don't know.
her.
Grace isn't somebody that you can forget, so I can't actually believe I missed it out of my history then, but there you go.
Oh my God. Well, she might not listen to this, so you might be
Well, God
okay.
willing.
So
That
look,
might bump up the Christmas present.
It's an interesting journey you've had, because as you said, you always wanted to do something and you never got the chance to actually complete that in terms of the passion and your purpose, and then you fell into something. Tell me a little bit about how you started on this journey with women in data and just data in general. What was it? What really got you to think, oh, you woke up one morning and said, I love data. I'm sure it probably wasn't that, but what was it? What made you think that this is where I'm heading?
Again, you know what? It was just one of those opportunities that arise in your lifetime. You know, actually, I was working pre the economic crash in 2008. I was actually running my own business, a small telesales business, which again, I sort of fell into people asking me to sell lots of different things. And then, it made sense for me to go and work in a permanent role. I had a mortgage on my own. It just made financial sense. Probably not that much sense because it was a recession and I just joined a recruitment agency. That said, I was incredibly lucky to work with one of the leading recruitment companies in that field. Actually, you could argue that the amount of time that we had to kind of, or for me to learn about data, the breadth of roles, the breadth of skills, and the different kind of industry sectors that it kind of spanned. And it just absolutely blew my mind, to be honest. You know, there was a reason why I was getting vouchers through my door. It wasn't just a coincidence that, they'd been looking at my sort of buying behavior in local supermarkets. And I just started looking at things a bit differently. And then, you fast forward 12 years on from there, we can all sort of remark about how the sector's evolved, how we all see it, how employers are now recruiting different skill sets, et cetera. It all's, the only key thing now is to really upskill the people coming forward. Women in Data was something that myself and Roisin McCarthy did back in sort of 2015, namely because we were top billing consultants. We knew that there wasn't very few women in senior leadership roles. And we knew that that was going to be very difficult if we didn't promote, the need for this kind of gender balance for women coming into the sector, but equally coming through the kind of managerial ranks. And it was a hell of a lot of fun. You know, we started off with 125 women in a tent one November with rain dripping through the tent to, you know, sort of 2,000, 1,500, you know, people in a incredible gig, which, you know, she is continuing to do some fantastic work across lots of different areas. But when I decided to kind of leave in January 2021, you know, for me, it felt like, you know, I wanted to go and explore something else. But very, very pleased with the kind of legacy that we left behind and the knowledge that I've gained throughout it. So I guess like many, I fell into data, really.
Yeah. And so it sounds like you found that sort of passion for data when you were at the recruitment, you know, starting in that recruitment business and industry. And then suddenly, as you said, you know, whether you're probably weren't being bombarded, but, you know, this whole idea of marketing and, you know, things that you were getting through the door and so on. So what, you know, and I completely get the fact that you, you know, then moved into the women in data, because obviously you're seeing that through the recruitment angle as well, no doubt. You're sort of, sure, you know, uncovering the challenges and limitations in that area. So that's one thing. And then the whole move into where you are now. How did that come about in terms of, was it partly down to the way you felt about education, or was it down to how you had spoken to people in that recruitment cycle, or what was it? What was the light bulb that went off in your head?
Well, you know what? I think there was one initial light bulb moment, then it was almost like a flickering bulb, right, that I hadn't taken any notice of for a while. So the light bulb moment for me was, you know, I placed a lot of graduates throughout that time, those 12 years, and I love doing that because there is nothing better than hearing that kind of delightful squeal of, oh my God, I've got a job, you know, and you can hear your relief in their voice. And that young person, right, we've all been looking, waiting for that phone to ring, watching the phone, is am I going to get the job offer, etc. And that is outstanding. That feeling never ever fades. Doesn't matter if you do it once a day, you know, once a month, it's just amazing. But my frustration was that, you know, if I had a pound for every time a grad said to me, yeah, I want to work in finance, or I want to work in a certain sector anyway, and they had absolutely no interest in it at all, they, you know, they just thought, I just need to get on the career ladder. And it's like, mate, this is going to be a long 50 years, right? So maybe just a small suggestion that you might try and do something that you're interested in, because then you're going to see yourself develop and progress and all those wonderful things. And I was very frustrated that how is it that these young people have kind of in effect come to their educational journey, but yet not be any wiser about probably the fastest growing career vertical, right? That's increased its, tripled its demand for talent, you know, that it's everywhere. We're using data everywhere, but how is it Britain's best kept secret in education? And then I guess my sort of, you know, I guess my daughter at that time was, well, I don't know, 16 or 17. So she was making sort of key choices and, you know, aside from university. So there's tens of, you know, millions of kids that are thinking about apprenticeships. Well, if that's the case, then we need to be getting the message out to education way sooner, right? Because these choices and I guess entry pathways need to be educated. So that was, I guess, the immediate light bulb, right? But I think the kind of flickering light bulb in my head is, like, I fleetingly went past it earlier in my admission of I failed the maths test, is that I absolutely despised maths at school, and I was absolutely terrible at it. I completely failed the mock, and in today's standards, I completely failed the new one. And I kind of had two choices, right? I was either going to go and do A-levels in English and History at the local sixth form, or I was going to go and do Fashion and Textiles, which sounds incredibly sort of diverse, but as a young person, I love making things, and I'm incredibly creative. I still do. And actually, my head of year was the head of woodwork, and I think I bumped into him once in like 5 years, and he said to me, actually, Rach, we think you, if you go to sixth form, you need to do maths. I said, I'm not doing it. He said, but you, if you go there, you do it. I said, then I won't go there. It's as simple as that. So the choice was made for me. Went off and did a 4-year degree in fashion and knitwear. Absolutely loved it. Did a year's placement. went to Hong Kong. I was going to rule the world, right? And then this is a piece of cake. Got a load of interviews for training buyer positions, quite a big department store, and absolutely flew through the telephone interview, through the face-to-face, mass test. Oh, my.
Oh, dear.
I just didn't know how to do it. And then to prepare for, I know it's so embarrassing, it was ratios, and I could literally feel my world shattering.
Oh.
And I remember sitting with my mum to prepare for other ones. Is, you know, ironically very good at maths. And she was, in the end, she was like, how do you not get this? And I guess what had happened is I'd switched myself off.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I guess,
yeah,
you know, when I started thinking about why is this so important to me, it was exactly that. That if I guess, and this is no blame to my mum by any stretch of imagination, but if she'd said, Karen Millen's got these amount of products, you know, where are you going to sell them in the country or why? Where are you going to stock them in the country and why? I could have done that. And I think what I wanted to do with Dig Data is I wanted to kind of package something up that didn't necessarily scream data or maths, but actually gave young people a problem that they could solve, that they came to the table with some engagement and some interest. Because we all know that if you're interested in something, if you come across a hump in the road that you haven't come across before, you're more likely to accelerate yourself over it because you're really interested in the end goal. So that was my sort of method behind my madness, really.
Okay. And just to go back to where you sort of experienced that, nowadays, a lot of the, you know, a lot of the young people, I have a 12-year-old, you know, they've grown up natively with digital. They've grown up, you know, with they don't remember the, you know, the phones that you had to put your finger in and, you know, dial through. I mean, you know,
in 20 minutes to dial a number.
Exactly. You know, so they've grown up with digital data. They've got, you know, everything. They are bombarded with so much social stuff right now. So what's lacking, would you say, then, with these native digital youngsters at the moment? Well, you know, and so what I'm trying to understand is, yet, you know, Dig Data provides them with this platform, but what's missing that you saw, which others didn't necessarily think was important?
I think it's really thought, you know, I think it's a simple, in some respects, is just connecting the dots, right? Because you're absolutely right. You know, I think kids are literally born with a phone in their hands these days, aren't they? You know, it's literally got a prize off of them. You know, what they don't know about setting up an iPhone or a laptop or you know, Snapchatting or whatever they're doing. Actually, when they think about data, does anybody sit down and say to them, actually, that's information? When they think of data, typically they think about the amount of sort of storage and stuff they've got on their phone, right? Or how, you know, how much sort of 4G or whatever. They don't go, data, oh, right, I wonder how Experian are going to, you know, plan the marketing budget for PlayStation or whatever. They don't think about it in that form. And I guess, like I mentioned, it's like Britain's best kept secret. If you don't understand data, everybody thinks it's just numbers and everybody gets really frightened about it. And everyone thinks, oh my, you've got to be a maths genius. So you naturally discount it. But even as a career vertical that should be considered, you know, along with all the other kind of roles that we're taught about at school, it's not. And the reason it's not is because people don't understand it. People in the data analytics space understand it and they go, well, this is a no-brainer. But to my point earlier, when promotional goods come through your door, you don't think, oh, that's because I swiped my Nectar card.
Yes.
You just think it's coincidence. Yes. Oh, look at that. You know, why would anybody line that up? It's a little bit like, you know, asking somebody who's not a detective to go and solve a case. You know, if you haven't got the information at hand or the valuable knowledge of somebody, how do you know? And I think, you know, as you're a parent and I'm a parent, you know, it's, we know how influential we are in our children's lives and in their choices and their values and all those types of things, as are their teachers. So if you're a parent, you only know what you know, right?
Yes.
If you're a teacher, you don't necessarily are made aware of these kind of new kind of career verticals in the depth that we do, and equally how their subjects can lend to them. You know, everyone talks about data scientists and then everyone goes, oh, you've got to be a genius, you've got to be that. And you know, that is probably one of the most technical roles, but what about all of the other roles?
Correct.
And the other valuable roles that are in those teams, you know?
So it's a good point, because what I'm trying to understand here is, you've hit upon a number of factors that are basically impacting the reality of where a lot of companies are. You know, there's been a spectrum of, well, let's just say investment has been made into a lot of data platforms, people, you know, etc. And there's a lot of organizations out there who are still challenged with, you know, getting the best out of their data. So what's wrong with the school system then? Where do you think the school system needs to, I mean, that's a big question, but, you know, where do you think the school system needs to change and adapt and become more of an amoeba-like entity rather than being such a set curricular type?
Yeah, it's a real hard one for me, you know, because the thing is as well, you know, some schools have really got it right, some schools just haven't. And I don't think that's necessarily to do with the teachers. I think there is simply no consistency. I mean, I used this example when I spoke to somebody recently, and I'll throw it out there again because, you know, part of me, it makes me laugh because at the situation, but it actually, the more I think about it, it horrifies me. So we were delivering a day-to-day in the summer term, and it was the Lloyds Banking Group day-to-day, and we had the privilege of working with Coventry Building Society and their team.
Okay.
So they'd come along to help us. I can't remember, it's about 100, 120 year 10 kids, so sort of 15-ish. And, you know, the Lloyds Banking Group delivered this a briefing session virtually, and all of the Coventry Film Society team were to my left, and I went to say something along the lines of, like, can everyone sort of tell me about their level of proficiency with Excel? And one boy said, is that the green thing? Oh. And I looked, like, you know when you see a cartoon character and their eyes come out?
Yeah.
I thought, I'm just going to have a little look at the volunteers. They looked at me like, are you joking?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was then the information that perhaps we should have been told before we turned up was actually they hadn't used Excel since year 7.
Right. Oh,
so
I see.
I argue
okay.
the point of why would you use it in year 7 and either not continue it, right? Why wouldn't you do that? Because that's a really good foundation tool, as is things like PowerPoint and all of those office skills. You know, shouldn't there be something that kind of runs through the whole years in terms of something like a employability skills and different areas that you should do? Because you know, just because you're not working in a data role per se doesn't mean to not, it doesn't mean that you don't have to be data literate.
Correct.
Don't have to be using, you know, a you know, office package. That should be standard.
Yes.
You know, even just how you open and close an email. You know, we back in the day, we were taught how to do cover and letters. We were told how to write CVs with dear, yours faithfully, yours sincerely, etc. Why isn't there this etiquette going on? So I think education is really up against it. I mean, I know everybody always talks about it, but really post-pandemic, there is so much pressure on education, on teachers. You know, they really are absolutely stacked. So quite often careers and those types of opportunities aren't always focused upon as much as, say, we think.
Yeah.
Because if you've got a careers leader and they're a teacher, they might have 3 or 4 hours a week. You know, if you're blessed and you've got a careers leader that is full-time in your school, then, you know, you're in a very, very valuable position. But again, you're then asking that person to know about every career. So,
of course,
hard.
Of course.
Is that, so, I don't know the answer of where to start and where to finish. Because if everyone was in the same spot, you'd have a plan, right? But
yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like there needs to be some base foundational characteristics in the curriculum that can absolutely be take that child on a journey.
Agreed.
You have your base, you know, English, maths, but you have your employability skills, which are,
agreed,
you know, your typical office type of tools, and maybe some sort of, you know, programming skills or just an entry point into
possibly
that.
Yeah. I think the thing is as well is that, you know, one thing that we don't do, or certainly we didn't have, and I don't think it is out there, is the fact that actually, you know, we all talk about bring yourself to the table, you know, what you've got, we've got. Not everybody, and we know this, not every, let's say, data scientist can deliver an absolutely engaging presentation.
Sure.
Not everyone has those two skills mixed together. And that's just an example. That's not a generalization
yeah.
by any stretch
yeah.
of the imagination. But what I'm saying to you is, if you had that kind of thread, right, that you had, let's say, problem solving, data literacy, you know, storytelling, presentation, you might find somebody that goes, actually, I'm really, really good at storytelling and presentation because I'm quite creative and I like to perform. Great. You might have somebody that's a really good problem solver and really good at presentation. If they have a level of knowledge of all four of them, they at least have some sort of understanding of how those dots, you don't have to be brilliant at each one of them.
Correct.
Because
yeah.
there's always going to be somebody that is an expert in one of those dots, but you could be between the two. But if you have a level of understanding of that, okay, you have still got something to offer the table. My people always say maths or English. Oh, if you're no good at maths, you'll be good at English. You know, that's how, when I grew up, that's what I believe. But actually, that's not true. That's not true at all. It doesn't mean that I have to be one or the other. It doesn't mean just because I'm not great at one of those subjects that actually I'm not going to have a great career. I've had a great career.
Yeah.
Out of talking. So,
and so what's bubbling in my mind is the fact that we've got all of these foundational elements, but then we've got things like AI that's now on the doorstep, you know, and that's going to cause quite a big stir in the whole educational gambit that we're facing, because not only are we going to have AI that's going to improve a lot of this access, you know, I can go onto ChatGPT and build a narrative pretty easily and then be able to tweak it and hone it with my own skills and context and experience and so on. So these tools are going to be therefore accessible to the children, and maybe we should start infusing them earlier rather than later, them aware of that. And maybe this is where the segue goes into, you know, what you guys are doing and how you're doing it and how that impact is being felt across, you know, those lower years to the upper, to year 13s, et cetera. So just take me through that. And I know AI is a big conversation, but where do you see, one, your programs impacting, and two, how do you feel that AI is going to help you get over that barrier or help the children get over that barrier?
Well, I think my first gut instinct when you said that to me was, I think when you mentioned AI to most kids or teachers, I think they just absolutely freak out, really. And I think they just, okay. I think they just,
well,
they're,
they,
oh
they
my
think
God.
Of robots, do they?
Yeah,
they think
you
of
just
the
took
Terminator.
The words right out of my mouth. You literally did. And I think you think, oh Christ, I think they probably think about kids not doing their homework and using it as an thing.
Right.
So
right.
they look at it from a, they're going to look at it in some respects from a negative point of view.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Kids are going to look at it as a, let me rub my hands together. I'll see you out at the football field in 10 minutes. I've just got someone some robot writing my homework. I'll / do my GCSEs, whatever. I think the way I agree with you about that, we should build it in earlier. And I also think if we talked about those four pillars, right, and you had little branches that came off of each pillar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So AI could be something that comes from the kind of a branch off of data literacy. So rather than going, everyone has to be advanced level of Excel, there could be these sort of building blocks, right?
Yeah.
You've got somebody that's like this and do that and those types of skills. I think every young person should understand what it's about, what the positive and the negatives are.
Correct.
I think that should be communicated as well. And I like the idea of potentially putting AI into one of our partners challenges to really sort of test it out. So now you've given me a little bit of food for thought now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for that,
Perfect.
Samir. I'll let you know when you're live. I'll run it past you. That's what I think, you know. And you're right, it's in everyone's conversation at the moment. Everyone's chatting about it, everyone's posting about it, and that's great. But it feels like sometimes everyone inhales something and they don't really sort of dilute it down and go, well, actually, in manageable, digestible chunks, we need to sort of break down, what does this actually mean?
Well, what's the practicalities are behind it? Because if we've got boards and you know, C-suite struggling with the concepts of AI right now, how do we, you know, children are sponges, as we know, you know, they absorb information. So maybe it's really interesting for us to say, actually, if we were to provide them with the not the outrageous type of, you know, the robots are coming to kill us type thing, because that's, you know, that's way off yet.
Yeah. Know, oh, good to know.
Sentient AI beings are way off, so I'm told. A free will in an AI is way off, but you know, maybe it's a bit close to home in terms of just, you know, again, these digital native children are growing up with AI being thrown at them. Even the, you know, if I don't know, TikTok is sending them new, or Instagram is sending them new ideas or new videos or whatever it might be, that's all algorithm generated. Mm. You know, mm. so that's another factor of AI is in their lives. It's mm. without them knowing. Yeah. And maybe that's a good thing in terms of, you know, but equally, as they get into the point of going into career, no doubt the careers of the future are going to be infused with AI.
Yeah.
You know, from creative industries through mm. to, you know, financial industries, mm. you know, through to manufacturing, everything is going to be, you know, the implications are huge. So I'm just wondering, you know, do we start right now and say, hey, listen, year one, you know, we're going to start talking about,
yeah,
you know, data and AI and you know, obviously at the lowest, you know, level, but, you know, just making them aware that actually this stuff is already around you. So
yeah, and I guess that awareness. Yeah, no, I mean, I remember, I can't remember who it was now. I think it was either on a podcast or a conversation. It was a while ago, and somebody pointed out, you know, you go to year R, right, year one, and you're sent home these what they call word cards, right?
Right.
So cats,
yes.
You know,
yeah,
all that sort of jazz. And then you get onto it. In my day, it was Jennifer Yellow Hat, Roger Red Hat, Billy Blue Hat.
Okay.
They're not the case anymore, okay. But you know what I'm saying. But we were never sent home with particularly any maths work to do. You know, like, so you've got one button, how many buttons we've got. So actually, I think, you know, I think AI should definitely be part of that. But I think that we should introduce, you know, English and words in that way. There's our communication yes. pillar. Then we've yeah. got our maths. Okay, well, that's our sort of numeracy. And that's where mm-hmm. we're starting to see, mm-hmm. You know, because you could argue that that's part of your problem solving.
Yeah, that's part of the base.
AI,
yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, just a lovely conversation about how it's used. Mm. That could be the beginning of your kind of data literacy. And I agree with you. You know, kids are like sponges. And let's be honest, the younger you are, the more you pick up. When you get
correct.
To those teenage
yeah.
years, I'm sure you just switch off. And we know that we've all been teenagers, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
To certain things anyway.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be great to be able to deliver a foundation of almost safety in AI?
Yeah.
How it's really good, how it's really good fun, how it's really innovative.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's a little bit like, you know, when you cross the road, you look right and left. Actually, don't talk
yes.
to stranger danger.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
We, that they're things that you remember. Ovens,
yeah.
hot, you know,
yeah.
that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And I agree with you. AI safety is huge. You know, I think that that's almost like distilling it. It's a great thought, actually, distilling it into, you know, we should weave it into the curriculum as easy as, you know, looking left and right when crossing the road. Absolutely.
Right. There you go.
And that's so simple, the way you put it, because it should be in
yeah.
that narrative. It shouldn't be this big, overarching, you know, complex you know, subject which is going to completely railroad any child from learning.
Yeah, and it's going to confuse them. It's going to give them fear so that they're going to avoid it.
Because the adults can't get it right now. So, you know.
No, exactly. But what would be really nice, though, is if you were, you know, going back to that year old, because that started my mind whirling. I'm like, right, okay, what do I need to do to do that? So if you had literally like a bit of a scorecard, I guess. So, you know, year R, we do this, and this, and those four things. Then we actually, in year two, we have to do this. And when we get to junior school, this is my kind of badge. When I go up to secondary school, this is where I'm at. So it might be the fact that you get to secondary school, right, and you're on the third pillar of data literacy. It might be that this person's at one. That could be because their problem solving is four and you're on two or whatever. But what you do is you try and get them all up to a reasonable level. But mm-hmm. what that would also mm-hmm. do is really indicate who you are. Because I was chatting to somebody before about sort of a careers platform, and it's great. And there's lots of messages out there that just aren't correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or maybe it's just historic information just being reused, because that's enough. And they were talking about certain careers and talking about what subjects they link to. And typically, everything to do with data only related back to maths. Nothing
Right.
related any of the other pillars. So for me, that was really strange. And when I sort of challenged that, they were like, "Well, that's just the way it is," which is why we're where we're at.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
all had the same.
Which is also why equally the Americas are AI. You know, they're way ahead of us. That's why a lot of the founders in the UK or Europe, pack up their bags and off they go straight to America because they know that they can make a bigger impact there. So, you know, and what they're doing is going to be accepted earlier. So maybe this is where we start to get more cute in the UK and Europe, where we introduce it way earlier. And so we get those little minds thinking about what they could do for the future. And actually we start to build, you know, the next entrepreneurs, the next, big Elon Musks or the Sam Altmans or whoever, instead of them being shipped out to America, we retain the talent. And
exactly
I think this is what we're missing here, you know, hugely.
Definitely.
In terms of
I just don't know. I don't know where it's. I mean, the only thing, not the only thing, but I think the way you need to start it is probably with something very, very simplistic. You know, if you've got word cards, you've got these, then, you know, each one of those pillars are important. Not everyone's going to be great at them. Some
Correct.
Are going to be better than others.
But
you're building out really that confidence in your own profile. Mm. You're knowing yourself. Mm. You know, we're giving it all the bring yourself to work or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But actually, when have you actually broken that down and gone, I am? Quite often, we don't want to say what we are because we don't want to be boastful. Or it might be that somebody says, God, you're really creative, am I? Because to me, it's so natural. I don't think it's creative. You know, I just feel it's something sometimes that people just can't recognise. And if you've got some tasks that you could build on, I just think it would steer you into a career path that is better for your skill sets rather than necessarily falling into a career, which we typically have done, you know, or avoiding that kind of needle in the haystack that you're applying for things that you just don't write for.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know,
and yes. And I think it's kind of, maybe it's incumbent on us and the educators and the government and, you know, large organizations to say, well, hang on, if we start early enough and we give everybody the same base, then they can imagine themselves being an architect, but using AI as a specific tool base. They can imagine being a screenwriter, but, you know, or dare I say, using AI because screenwriters don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, or being a filmmaker, or being a writer. Sorry, I've already said writer, but you know, being something else. But knowing that I have this this leverage that I can use this AI to help me, but actually, I know what I am because I really enjoy being a sports person, and I can use AI to lift myself when I want to understand, you know, am I being challenged enough, or, you know, what's the next set of exercises I need to do, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But isn't that then you find your way rather than being pushed into it, like you said? And
yeah, I think you lead your way is what you do. You know,
you
lead your way. You've got that kind of capability to say, you know, this is one of the things that I love about Dig Data, really, is the fact that probably 8 or 9 people have actually from university have gone into data roles, which makes me super happy. And I know it's only 8 or 9 people, but it's only a short amount of time we've been running. But some of the feedback that I've had, which really, really I was made up with, is that they said, we had something really positive to talk about at interview. So it might be the fact that you've gone, oh, all my life I'm going to go and work in, I don't know, finance and or banking or whatever. And you do a banking challenge, you think, oh, that's not really float with
that's
my
not
boat.
What I
but
thought,
actually, yeah, you know, I, thank God I haven't gone and signed up and, you know, signed on the dotted line to do that. But what we do is give young people the opportunity to sort of dip their toe in the water with lots of different industry sectors so they can really find out what it is that really floats their boat.
Yeah.
But equally, can you imagine going and say, oh, okay, so you've done, I don't know, the ITV career challenge. You know, what did you find out about yourself? Well, number one, actually, I know quite a lot about broadcasting. Number two, I thought I was really good at Excel. Turns out there's loads more for me to learn.
Mm-hmm.
you know, but I am really creative. I found translating the findings into this format really, really good, you know, and it's an opportunity for you to unveil your strengths, unveil your weaknesses in a very positive project where you have undertaken it yourself to find out more about an area of interest, about your career, and for you to assess, this is what I need.
Yes.
You know, this is what I've got, this is what I need, which is a really positive message to any employer. If they, you know, if they know what you think you need, then you can work in line with one another, and
Correct.
It's not out of the realms of possibility. So, you know, there's lots of positive attributes to getting involved in what we're doing, you know. So absolutely loving it.
Fantastic. So tell me a little bit more about the program, some of the programs that you're doing now, because we haven't really spoken about it, because we've come from this, you know, sort of, you know,
we've been putting
which
the world
often
to
happens.
rights. That's
Well, we
why.
are. And that's what we do on this podcast. You know, I mean, that's the whole point. We talk about the issues of the day and how it's going to impact us. But yeah, but, you know, world domination and making sure, you know,
There
we
you
wake
go.
up tomorrow in a good place. So tell me a little bit more and what's happening with things.
Sure. Okay. So we launched in July 2021, as you well know. We work with three student cohorts. So we've got first step years 7 to 9, next step years 10 to 13, step up university and higher education students. So currently we've got just over 13,000 active members. We work with over 1,000 schools and colleges directly, and 105 unis. So yeah, we're super,
Amazing.
Super proud of that.
Amazing.
With an ambition that we'll be hitting kind of and communicating directly with 3,000 secondary school and colleges by the end of the summer term.
Crazy.
The people that do the course for me are probably hating me for that target, but you've got to be in it to win it, right? So
absolutely.
That's what we're doing there. We've worked with a really beautiful portfolio of clients, super proud of it. So we've worked with BT, CACI, Capital One, Experian, Facebook, GSK, ITV, Lloyds, Shell, Rapp, Omnicom, and quite recently Unilever. So you can
look
just
at
see from
you,
that
big
portfolio.
names.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. Yeah, drop those names in conversation, in
bit
Southern
of a name
conversation.
drop.
Oh, you know what?
What? That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've literally just signed somebody this week, which I'm busting to shout from the rooftops, but I can't. Which is going to be really super exciting and give the students way more, you know, another direction to go in. But
amazing.
The point was is that we wanted to build a portfolio of clients, like I say, that it's got different problem statements, essentially with names that students recognise.
Yep.
And I guess to open their eyes to the kind of breadth of different careers. So let's, for instance, you know, as part of the BT challenge for next step, we work with Openreach. A lot of the students were really surprised about the kind of data work that they did, because when they thought naturally of Openreach, they thought of a male or female on the side of the road near a green box.
Yes.
You know,
Yeah.
fair enough. That's what we,
Yeah.
you know, that's what a lot of people
That's
think.
Assumptions
And
and
they,
perceptions of things like that. Yeah.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
it's really sort of delving a bit deeper and how data was actually helping those engineers, you know, to make sure that, you know, broadband stayed up and running, etc. So they're the clients we've worked with. What we actually do is we work with those partners to create a problem statement for each one of those cohorts, whereby we try not to mention the word mass or data, so that we have a broad and diverse engagement level from students of each cohort, right? So it's also important that within that problem statement that they're actually interested in it and they can relate to it. So we'll talk about the Unilever ones that we just done, which are brilliant. So they have obviously got lots and lots of different brands. It turns out Ben and Jerry's is one of them.
Okay.
What kid doesn't like ice cream?
Exactly.
It would turn out lots. So their problem statement was, can you do Ben and Jerry's a flavour?
All right.
So we basically then build out a scenario. Ben and Jerry's have got three flavours of ice cream. You know, they have to choose one to launch at an event in London this autumn. Looking at our data, can you tell us which flavour you recommend? What should be the recommended retail price? And, you know, bonus question, should it be dairy or non-dairy?
Yeah.
Right. So kids have gone, Ben and Jerry's, love it.
Yeah.
Okay. And what we do, and we do this for, we created one for Magnum Ice Cream for our next step cohort. And then we did a Ben and Jerry's one for our step up cohort at university. And essentially what we do is we go out and we obviously promote all of our events that are hosted outside of school on Teams. And we host one 45 minute briefing session for each one. So the students come along, we do a bit of an icebreaker, a bit of a quiz. Get kids sort of very much engaged. We talk to them about the problem, the mission that we want them to solve, answer any questions, show them a snippet of the data, ask them to kind of put into the chat what they think that means. And then we talk about them presenting their sort of recommendations and findings. And certainly for the younger years, we're like, look, if you want to create a TikTok video, do it. If you want to write a story, do it. If you want to, you know, a really upskilling Excel or any other kind of language, brilliant. Or indeed, if you want to just develop your PowerPoint and your Canva skills, go for it. We just want you to get involved. So the smallest cohort would work with something like 100 rows of data. The largest cohort would work with, you know, 20,000 rows plus.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that we do for Step Up, the university cohort, is that we always create two approaches to the challenge. So there's one that's very data science and very an opportunity for those young people to be able to apply maybe some of their programming languages and skills, but equally one that's kind of less technical and more kind of strategic.
Okay.
So that, you know, people are coming to the table and I guess applying maybe their knowledge in a certain industry area, but then actually using data as that skill, whereas the other ones are probably using their knowledge to apply their skill.
So
that's what we do. And the students go away and they work on this in their own time for a certain amount of days. And then each one of them is awarded with a virtual work experience certificate. So fantastic opportunity for, you know, students from secondary school up, because we've got five short years options, GCSEs. You know, these are great for personal statements, UCAS applications, LinkedIn, you know, CVs. And like I said to you before, it's that topic, positive topic to talk about. What did you like? What didn't you like? You know, what is it that you need?
Yeah, and I think from what you've said, actually, it's not just the data foundation here, or, you know, or that literacy aspect. They're actually getting a wider view of a business problem, a business challenge that could well need, and it probably will need, many different diverse characters to solve that problem. And I think that's what I love about it. I used to do this quite a bit with another organization, where we used to go into inner city schools and help them understand the world of business. You know, just give them that business literacy view of, hey, listen, you know, how do you start a company? How do you think about a brand? How do you think about marketing? How do you name your company? How do you name, you know, and then think about your audience and your customers and who's going to buy this brand? And, you know, when you said recommended retail price, we'd speak to them about that. So it gives them such a diverse view of the things that are required to deliver a pen, you know, to deliver a pen. It's not just, you know, putting it out on a shelf and somebody buys it. There's a whole industry behind that. And that's the most amazing thing, that I think you can embed those principles right now and give them that view of the world to say, it is technology, but there are softer skills. There are selling skills. There are understanding psychological skills, and, you know, why people buy, why are they motivated to do that. So I think this is fantastic, because it definitely does give them a different view of not just their capabilities, but what's required in the world of work.
100%. I mean, you know, we also know, you know, having been children ourselves, that we, you know, not every young person is going to log on after school and do, you know, be really proactive and do a challenge. So one thing that we wanted to do was create a classroom resource, which we're incredibly proud of. We've developed this, and it actually aligns to the maths curriculum in England. It associates to a maths skill, although it isn't just about maths. It can be picked up by any subject leader, and it really assists schools in hitting what they adhere to, which are things like Gatsby benchmarks, which essentially are 8 rules directed by the government around careers. So linking quickly to careers, encounters with employers and employees, labour market information, personal guidance, etc. So we've got that can roll out to teachers across the UK, and each child that completes that classroom resource gets a virtual work experience certificate too. So there's an award to it, but it's really fun. I mean, one of them is like, how should PlayStation spend their marketing budget?
Fantastic.
You know, just great stuff like that. It's you know, they're really exciting things. So if you are somebody that isn't disengaged with maths or just doesn't see the point of it, and why would I do it? It's a fun way for people to get involved. And then lastly, we I think it was last year, no, the May before, we started going into schools and delivering data days, which are pretty much what they sound, Tim, right? We deliver a career challenge in a day. They are super amount of fun. I mentioned it with kind of was school and contribute to society. We're doing loads of those. And it's just been brilliant. It's almost like about 12:30 on these days, the message kind of lands, oh, right, I know what I'm doing. And then you see some amazing work.
Yes, yes.
And it's a real, what's the word I'm looking for? It's really nice to go back and see what it's like to be 13, 14, 15 again. Because, oh, and I don't mean that just from a non-responsibility, I don't have to pay my bills, can I not go to work anymore? Yeah. Okay, that would be also nice. Is the fact that actually, you know, as a 40-something year old mum, you forget what it's like to be that age, right? And we all want our kids to do this and this and this and this. But actually, if you were to look at the 15-year-old Rachel Keane or the 19-year-old Rachel Keane, when my daughter does stuff now, I think, I would have definitely done that. Yeah. I don't tell her that, obviously. I'm like, there could have been a better way that you could have delivered that, Grace. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, have you thought about how that looks? And then I thought, actually, I actually did exactly the same as that. But but it's nice to see.
Yes.
You know, that probably some of the biggest problems they've got on their list right now is, you know, where they're going out Friday night or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's nice to see. And I think we all talk about it. But, you know, to be able to give back on your skills. And we're also always recruiting for volunteers. So if anybody's interested, then check us out at digdata.online. There's a
volunteer. And I did sign up. I signed up.
There you go. Oh, no, you did, Samira. I was really stuffed about that. Thank you. Well, I'll email you the tens of projects we've got going on.
Good, good. I look forward to it. So my final question to you then, and it is, where next? Where's the vision heading? Where are you going to be in 10 years? 5 years?
On a yacht, drinking champagne. Oh my God, did I just say that out loud?
I'll be there with you.
Data literate, hopefully.
Oh my goodness.
Where will I be in 10 years? Right.
Well, you know, the company. Where do you think? Where is it heading, you know, that you'd like to see it mature into a specific new world? Because that's where we're heading, really, aren't we?
Yeah,
we're
sure.
Heading to a very new world.
I think... For Digdata, I think there's so much possibility. I mean, naturally, we want to build up our portfolio clients, of course.
Sure.
I would love to be working with government to make sure that we can put some of our resources into the curriculum and have that sort of mandatory. I would also love to use some of our examples in maybe some test papers for exams. I think that's really important. I think that we should be utilising our career challenges and some of our resources to really upskill, you know, people in their career. Because, you know, if somebody said to me, Samir, are you data literate? I'd say no, but actually I do use data all the time to a certain level. And I think people, when we mentioned this earlier, people quite often run away from skills they don't have any exposure to, especially the older they get up, because they just think that makes them look silly or stupid or whatever. I'd really love to build confidence in businesses that have, you know, a large proportion of non-data people, so that people can really start understanding one another, plus giving people the opportunity to really think about the possibility of career transitioning into something else. Because, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, if you look back, you know, you do career transition quite a lot in your life, right? And I decided to do that at 45. And take not only, you know, a bit of courage in myself and confidence in myself, but some skills. But I think this could be a really, really good way to build current future talent pipelines, right? Yeah. There are women that go to work, right? They're not necessarily in data right now or tech right now, but there are women who could be upskilled to fulfill that pipeline. You know, we're doing the stuff from the bottom. There's lots of organizations out there doing it. You know, we need to think of other ways.
True.
And the way to do that is the investment in the people that you already have, to understand that people don't always want to do that career forever, but to understand how valuable you are or they are for a company. So I want to build something that is incredibly rewarding, that has a lot of impact for everybody.
Wonderful.
And then I'm going to go onto a yacht
and drink your champagne.
I'm going to drink the champagne, and that's I'm going to let everybody else run
and let your daughter run the company. There you go.
There you go. Rachel? Of course, Amir, I'll be talking to you. So.
Well, I've given you so many ideas today. No,
I know.
Rachel, look, it's been such I've had a fantastic time speaking to you. Thank you so much for coming on, and I wish you all the best of luck. And I am sure you will be there with that mission even earlier than 10 years or 5 years. So, you know, that yacht is looking good. So
thank you very much.
You have a good
thank
day.
You for having me.
No problem. My pleasure.